Welcome to another session of Free Speech with CR. And my name is Keith Flamer, and I am here with my co-host, Molly Blakemore.
Hi, I'm Molly Blakemore, Marketing Director for College of the Redwoods, and I'm here with our Veterans Center Coordinator, Matt Gilliland.
Hi, my name is Matt Gilliland. I am the Program Coordinator for Veterans and Military Family Student Services. I also served 4 years in the Marine Corps from 2003 to 2007. I served two tours in Iraq and one tour on the 31st MEU to Okinawa.
I am Marley Alouzier. I work in the student enrollment services as admissions and records and processing. And I was also enlisted 4 years in the Marine Corps from 2017 to 2021. And I was non-deployed all stateside garrison.
Fantastic. Thank you very, very much for being with us today. So here's my first question. So you were both active duty. So what was it like making that transition from the service to education? What was that transition like for you?
I'll go first. So for me, I think one of the most overwhelming things was just the amount of choice that I had available to me. I went from an environment where I was told where to be, when to be there, and then how to do whatever I was doing when I got there to what do you want to do?
Yeah.
And it's that's a kind of a paralyzing question for if it was for me at that time. I think one of the other things that really affected me at that time is I had recently had a baby. And so my sense of get this done, get back to work was a big motivating factor, stressor, probably both at different times.
Okay. How about you, Malia?
It was pretty similar. Mine was a lot of similar things in terms of, you know, be there when you had a set schedule, you knew what you were doing, probably a week or two out, you know. And then I had nothing to do for a couple months, and it threw me not off the deep end, but it was a transition. And academia was the way to build that community back, because a lot of that transitional problem was because I had a loss of community, and coworkers that were friends as well were now gone because it wasn't relatable. I was now in the civilian sector, and by going to college and having the Veterans Resource Center, when I moved on to academia, it helped me rebuild that in a way that was not only healthy, but, you know, easier.
Okay. I'm really curious about what it was like for you both in the classroom, from being you went from boot camp to active duty, and you're in the classroom with people that don't have the same level of experience that you have. So what was it like trying to build a community with students that you may not have very much in common with?
I remember being really mad at people coming into a room late. Yeah, it was tough reading. Like, what? Now I'm late for everything, so I've made that full transition. I think also, you know, I didn't really feel like I fit in. There were oftentimes senses of, you know, I don't belong here, as well as, hard to relate with folks who, especially, you know, because I joined the military late also.
So how old were you when you joined?
I was 23 when I joined. So I was 27 years old when I got out. And so being in a classroom with 18 and 19 year olds was, I didn't really know how to even talk to folks. So I just was there for the material to do my work and go home.
Did you not feel like you belonged because of your age, or was it because of your military background or your point of view, or was it just like a imposter syndrome, like you're not really a student? Why was it a feeling of not belonging?
I guess because of that sense of I'm here to accomplish this thing, to give back to work, to like help support my family. I wasn't necessarily trying to find myself, which I think is a more typical experience for a college student. And then also the drive and the discipline, and I'm here and I'm focused and I'm doing these things, and I didn't care about the social aspect of
it. Monica, how about for you? How would that transition?
Kind of similar. Mine's a little bit more fresh, so like I had a lot more emotions tied to it, I suppose you could say.
Emotions, how? What does that mean?
I had a lot of animosity towards my peers in some areas. For instance, them coming in late, the not having respect for the instructor, which in my opinion is a hierarchy thing. Like you have rank, the instructor is a higher rank essentially. And so it was just, do you not respect the instructor? They are putting their time here. They are getting paid to do this. Yes, but you are also here to, you know, to learn. And I had animosity building that way. And then, you know, I had the drive, as he mentioned, to get my things done. I arrived on time, often early. I stayed late if the instructor needed assistance doing something, or just, you know, putting my 110% out of 100. And a lot of students would, you know, take advantage of the instructor's generosity with late work or midterms or what have you. And I mean, I'm not to sound very crass, but a Sally Sob story in a way. And it's like things do happen, but I didn't have that emotional awareness to understand that at the time, because I had transitioned from something that not really cared about your emotions. You got the thing done in the Marine Corps. So there was that. And then also the instructors recognize that you are older, that you have a structure to you. And so they are much more likely to, hey, Marlia, you're on this field trip. Will you please, like, you know, help me keep a head count or keep track? And I'd be the last one at the walk just to make sure that no one got
straggled.
Exactly.
Snuggles, yep.
And so you're working. It felt like I was a TA sometimes. So
really, extra duties do get assigned.
Yes, extra duties were very much assigned. And it was different with each course. So I was in forestry is what I received my associates in here.
Which is why I first met you in forestry class.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
So associate's degree in forestry, the dynamic for forestry is a lot different than what the dynamic is for regular general education courses like English.
Explain that. What do you mean by that?
In some coursework, I would receive, or not coursework, in some courses I would receive, you know, forestry, the instructor would be more, and the students would also be typically more open, like, oh, cool, you were in the Marine Corps, or you were this, or you that. And then in other courses, they would think negatively about the military and the policies that are assigned. But, you know, being in the military, we all know, or a majority of us at this table know, that you just do as you're told. It's not you dictating. You signed up and you just do as you're told by whoever's above you. And that includes the president and everyone else. It doesn't matter what you agree with or who you voted for.
Do you feel that the instructors had that same mentality, or was it more your classmates?
I think it was the instructors as well.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of offhanded things that comments people make, and you take note of it. It might not be, you know, outright, you know, but a majority of the time, it is obvious.
Can you share what some of those comments were?
It would be more along the lines of, and I hear it even today at work, in times right now, or it's very stressful with the way things are going, or we don't know what's going to happen right now.
So it's code for something else is what you
mean. Exactly. It's just code.
Interesting.
And it was very much like, okay, when I'm writing this essay for my political science course, I need to write it in a way that is appropriate for the instructor to not give me a bad grade because our opinions don't align. And I did as such because I wanted a good grade.
And so then you did censor your own schoolwork because you didn't know how we would come across to the instructor.
Correct. I mean,
that's typical.
That's what I was going to ask. So are you hearing these same stories from that are coming into you to
even now?
Yes, definitely. And it's something that I do remember experiencing as well. Like, okay, we're not going to write that. We're going to start over. And then, yes, I do experience that with students now. And it's often really tricky to give them advice, and that they are here to explore themselves and their ideas and strengthen their ability to critically think. And you're not wrong for being aware of that. And you're going to have to play your cards appropriately when doing these assignments, because
not everyone has your opinion that things should be unbiased.
Sometimes it's hard to, you know, learn what a rubric is and then follow it and then tailor what you're writing so that it can't be utilized against you, like that's the assessment structure.
So
it's challenging.
As a student, you didn't feel like it was helpful to talk to the instructor when you felt this way, and then also now, is that something that you would not advise as a veteran student to try?
I do tell students to talk with their instructors. The thing I harp on most is to make sure that they're in a good emotional place that day, so that they're not the one going in and being combative. That's not going to do anybody any good. But yes, approaching an instructor and developing a relationship with faculty it's paramount. You have to do it. And even if it doesn't go well and you still can't find common ground, at least now you know where your boundaries are, for things that you can write about or can express in class.
Great. Well, I was just going to say that at the very least, at least maybe some instructors will realize their own bias if you're talking to them about it. Maybe now, especially when they're being asked to look at their own bias more in the classroom.
Is that something they're being asked to do?
Well, I think kind of in this coded way that you're talking about, we are asking them to be aware of that with that, you know, anti-DEI stuff and the pushback against, for woke isms. That they probably are being more reflexive, but I don't know because I'm not a student, so this is interesting.
You know, you grab a point of that there are code languages that you hear. And I'm curious, in today's world where we see that tension in America, and you being former Marines, how do you feel about what's going on in the country? And how do you deal with it, knowing that you served and then you see all this discord? And how do you bridge that gap, especially internally, but also for fellow vets that come into the center?
Okay.
Now I realize that that's a hard question.
Yeah. So I guess how I internally perceive what I'm seeing in the news and on media and things of that nature is I'm really kind of disappointed that we're not talking anymore. We're not talking to people, we're talking at people. There's a big stress on having your facts straight, or so that you can combat somebody in those public spaces, and there's no space. There seems to be a lack of space to wrestle with issues with somebody who might have an opposing opinion, because like for me, challenging what I think about something is really vulnerable, and I don't, you know, there's only a select few people that I trust enough to
have a conversation with
and challenge what I'm thinking and not feel like it's going to get used against me in some other way, because I'm not trying to necessarily win a conversation. I'm trying to honestly at this point find a path, like where's a pathway to a solution, not even the solution itself, but like can we find the pathway to one, or a pathway to explore to one, and it doesn't seem like it doesn't seem safe to explore that with very many folks. So when I'm working with students, luckily I do have that mission mindset of I'm here, I work for them. So I don't care what they think. I'm here to solve problems that will facilitate their success here and beyond. It doesn't register to me, to try to convince somebody that I think the way that they think is incorrect. I don't think it's appropriate in my role to express that to anybody. My job is to let them know that I'm here to work through problems with them. And not, it is hard sometimes to not wrestle with issues, because, you know, you get asked your opinion. Like, what do you think about this? And it's hard to...
Yeah. I mean, especially when it comes to like what is happening with the National Guard, what's happening with previously we both got asked, I know I did, and I'm fairly certain you did, about the female military standards for certain MOSs. And
I mean, someone came out and asked you that question
from our workplace, which is good. It's healthy. I encourage it, because you know, it did open up a conversation. You know, I was asked, well, what are your opinions on, you know, the restrictions for the physical readiness of certain combat roles?
Interesting.
And my answer was, you know, if I can't carry you out because I didn't meet those physical requirements, how would that person's sibling feel? Because I made it in, but I couldn't do the thing that was required of me. And they're like, oh, yeah. That makes sense. But on the surface level, people are seeing it as you're cutting females from these positions. And it's like, no, it's not necessarily that. Yes, it does limit what we can do, but there are limitations that some of us do have and some of us don't. Some of us can, you know, can do those
tasks all the
yeah,
pass those requirements. Do you feel like there's a lot of scrutiny on the military right now?
Yeah, I think so.
Can you talk about why you think that scrutiny is there?
I mean, I think that scrutiny is there partially because they view it as the military as a tool for the presidency to utilize, which it is to an extent. However, I do think that not ostracizing, but pigeonholing a whole subsect of individuals that once were and are currently or looking to be is not beneficial.
Enlisted, you mean?
Enlisted and also officer row.
Just join the military.
Exactly. Like, you see veterans and they're like, well, what do you feel about the National Guard? It's like, well, I can feel a lot of things about it, but unfortunately, like, what is happening. I can't change anything. The same with those who are in the military, in the National Guard, doing that. You know, they are given orders and they are to follow those through unless, you know, it was a combat role and you have a moral or religious obligation to not. And
a moral or
religious obligation
to not follow an order.
Yes.
Do you think the Constitution plays?
I mean, there is a conscientious objections opportunity that people have in the military. And I mean, we saw not quite a conscientious objection when it came to the COVID vaccination, but we had many individuals who removed themselves from the military or were removed rather because they did not readily take the COVID vaccination while they were enlisted and they were removed from those positions. And, you know, I mean, ideally, you wouldn't have to be brought with that decision, but, you know, some people don't quite understand that these National Guard deploying is one of those crossroads. Like, you are just having to follow your orders and these individuals are just doing their job. So I don't know if that makes sense.
No, it's actually, it did. It does make a lot of sense. Matt, I'm going to go back to a statement you made in order to follow up the debate. Is that you described extremely well what Molly and I have talked about is that gap between people and how do we bridge that gap between people.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then you did articulate extremely well that we just have lost the ability to listen. And we've lost the ability to communicate with each other instead of at each other.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think we should solve that in this institution? What do you think we should do? And how do you think we should go about doing it? Because I think everyone would love to be able to solve the problem, to be able to talk with. But I don't know if people know how to do that anymore. How do you think we should do it?
I don't think that mandating that people do that is a viable solution. Or I don't. Man, that's a tough question. To listen to people who you disagree with, and to try to find common ground takes humility, and so I don't know how to instill humility in people or an institution in an effective way. But I do think that if we're going to get there, you have to have some humility and not want to protect yourself, which then takes trust in that the person that you're wrestling over an issue with is not going to use your stance against you in another way. So there has to, I guess, like, as an institution, I think we, you know, making the amends necessary so that folks trust us in a way that they're willing to be vulnerable, so then we can wrestle through different issues.
Well, what do you think?
Mine is less of the people aspect of that question and more of like the environment. For instance, if I'm about to have a tense conversation with somebody that I care about, or I just want to have a tense conversation, I don't want to do it at their home or at my home. I want to do it in a neutral place. So if I'm trying to have one of those conversations in an instructor's classroom, that may or may not have ramifications or retaliation in form of my grade or where the individual has ownership of the space, I suppose you could say, or authority. It helps to have that discussion because there is no fear of retaliation. There is no, this is my territory. This is my space. I feel, you know, like I need to defend it, or that I'm in someone else's space and I feel unsteady on off ground. How can you find a common ground if you're not
unsafe?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, I think these are really challenging questions that everybody's trying to get to the bottom of right now, is how do we get here where we don't listen to each other anymore, and how do we get past that? And I think Matt hit on it. It's about community and trusting the people that you're working and living with and in a community with. And that seems to be challenging right now. So to wrap it up.
And I want to thank you both for being with Molly and I today. I learned a lot. So thank you very much. And hopefully that you also did enjoy the conversation as much as Molly and I did.
You've been listening to Free Speech with CR. I'm Molly Blakemore.
And I'm Keith Flamer.
And thank you for joining us. And we will see you next month.